And we're live.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 103 of the Fans of Power podcast. I'm Tyler Baker, and with me, as always, is the Rotten Amato himself, the one and only Joe Amato, the guy who knows nothing of the Dino Saucers cartoon.
Not a thing. I felt horrible. You know, those people are going
this
nuts.
This guy takes such credit for, well, obviously him being older than I am, you'd think he would be more aware of so many 80s cartoons. And I just like to point out that, you know, it's quite embarrassing how Joe had no idea, like, who the hell are these dinosaur characters and why does all these people think it's such a great idea?
That was one insane, that post you did. My God, I can't believe the amount of likes and comments and everything. It's like, these people are going insane for this. Now, what year did Dinosaucers come out again?
It was the late 80s. It was the tail end of the 80s, because I think it may have been 88 or 89.
Okay, so like I told you, I pretty much kind of almost stopped with a lot of cartoons by that year, so I guess that's...
Oh, I know, but it's just one of those things, because there's still... And this has nothing to do with He-Man, but I just figured it'd be fun to throw this out to 80s cartoon enthusiasts. I'm sure if you do know what Dinosaucers is, please send me or Joe a message or let us know that there are other people who like Dinosaucers or are familiar with it. So I'm trying to get Joe to do a custom Dinosaucer figure for his custom business, because I would just love to see the attention going to this obscure 80s cartoon that apparently has got a good amount of fanfare.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to do it. I mean, after seeing the response that when you posted, I was like, well, I could tell. It looks like there are plenty of people that are really interested in that. So I was like, yeah, I think I could do that then.
Awesome. Well, that just has nothing to do with this week's episode of He-Man, but it just kind of was just, I had no real intention of doing that, but I just like, hey, what the hell not? Why not just go ahead and bring up, you know, the whole Dinosaucers topic? So if people are aware of Dinosaucers, please let me know. Or go to Joe's Facebook page and say you wanted to do a custom, because I would love for attention to be brought to this particular cartoon.
Yeah. Do you think it's something that fans would like to see a Universe podcast? But hell, it's a lot of Masters fans seem like they're...
Well,
really
hell, I honestly would love to see Dinosaurs crossover with He-Man in general, because these are dinosaur men from outer space. I could see them easily crossing over with He-Man, because we have dinosaurs in the He-Man mythology. So, hell, to see Joe do a classic style... Of course, the dinosaurs in scale are a lot larger than human beings. But, I mean, I wouldn't argue that. Just to see an Allogengus Rex, Plesio, or a Ronothunder in classic style by Joe, I would just love to see that. And it would be something I would love to see crossover with He-Man, because it's... Like, people begin to think Thundercats, they think Silverhawks, Bravestar, Blackstar. Dinosaurs, to me, is not far-fetched. I could easily see that crossing over with He-Man. Not everything can cross over with He-Man, no. But I can clearly see Dinosaurs crossing over with He-Man.
To try and
tie it back to He-Man.
Yeah, no, I could. And I wanted to acknowledge somebody else out there. I think it was Jake Paul. I can't say your last name. I don't know if I ever attempted, but he knows who he is. He watched our Beyond Retro podcast last Friday, and out of all things for him to comment on some post, I forgot where it was, he was like, I noticed that you had something in the background, like, you know, while you were doing the video. Oh, that was it. I posted a preview for my giant scare glove.
Oh, what do you know? It happens to be sitting right behind you.
Isn't that weird? And that was, yeah, it was sitting right there in back of me in that episode. I didn't have the staff painted. I don't know if I had all the details, but he noticed that. I was like, well, that's kind of cool that he noticed. So I was like, good eye, man, and I appreciate you at least observing some of these things that I put just for fun. I always do that for fun. I'll put some thing there just to see, you know, see if anybody catches.
Man, the comment we get for doing Beyond Retro has nothing to do with the horror movies we're talking about, man.
I know, but nothing about Chucky.
I mean, what can we say? Our bread and butter comes from the power of Grayskull here. We can't argue with that.
Exactly. So, what was that? Was your cheap shot to show your Skeletor you had over there?
No. I was making adjustments here with some technical stuff.
Gotcha.
No, The only thing I could show is I went out to my local Hallmark and bought the Skeletor Christmas Hornet, so I didn't have to fool around with waiting to like sometime late November when I, you know, I mean, He-Man, I made the mistake of waiting a little too long last year. I kept delaying things because of the money was, even though it was just a few, you know, it was like $15, but still I was just like, okay, I'll just wait a little bit closer to Christmas. It's sold out everywhere. I couldn't find it. I like to never found it, so I'm not going through that hell again this year. So I went there and got it today.
At least you got it. And I was going to say hello to JSP. He's in the chat room. Thank you for joining us, as always. It's good to see you here. And I got that Skeletor one too. My sister bought it for me. She got it as an early birthday present. So
cool.
I'm glad I got it. So yeah, it's good. At least, yeah, let fans know. Go to your local Hallmark store or look online. They now have the Skeletor, just like Tyler said, the Skeletor ornament. So you can have it to go with your He-Man, and we'll have to see if they do one next.
They don't have a description of Skeletor on the back of the box, which I thought was kind of odd. Like they'll have a description of Darth Vader and Kylo Ren probably, because I think they did him a couple years ago. And various other villains, the Alien Queen, the alien from Alien, the Predator.
Huh.
But for some reason, there was no description of Skeletor. I'm thinking, it's because his title is Lord of Destruction, but you had no problem writing a description for an alien hunter that takes people's skulls and spinal columns as trophies.
I wonder if they did that for He-Man. I'd never even paid attention. I wonder if He-Man.
I just noticed that when I was buying Hallmark ornaments years ago, that they would write up a bio on the back for, you know, the Batmobile from the 89 film, Jaws, Ghostbusters, all the various ornaments I've purchased over the years. And I looked at Skeletor to see what they wrote, and it was like a generic, you know, Hallmark message, you know, hey, it's memories and nostalgia and this. And I'm like, No Skeletor buy from Hallmark. I thought that was kind of odd.
I see. That's something I never even knew about. I never bought any of the ornaments before. My sister even got me I take that back. I did buy the He-Man one. Because when I heard about it, she said, hey, if you go to the Hallmark store, you can get a card and you can get like a discount off of something, or I don't know what it was, but that's why I went. So that was the first ornament. I take that back. I did buy the He-Man ornament, and she bought me the Skeletor one this year, but I never looked even at the back of the box, and I would never have an idea that there was bios on the back of those. So that's
It's not a bio. It's just a description. It was like a friendly little summary of what the ornament of the character that you're, you know. I have them, all my ornaments are still, they're boxed up in the closet over here, so I'm not going to dig through it. But there's a bio, I believe He-Man had one too last year, but it was just a, not that it burns me up right by any means. I was just glad to have it, but I just thought that was kind of odd. But
okay,
you know, but I'd say better that than some god awful classic spy slapped on the back of the Hallmark ornament saying he was, you know, sporting his techno vest, lit Skeletor, you know, hover over your Christmas tree this year. Yeah,
that's you weird. Yeah, I wonder what they would have put for the Skeletor one, but. Well, hell, either way, cool ass little form. I
yes.
can't believe the detail they put in those ornaments. I mean, they are quite detailed. They don't look cheapy, you know. They don't.
No, and I hope that Hallmark will continue more. Like maybe next year we'd get Battle Cat or Panther or, you know, I mean, God willing, like another character like Beastman or, I mean, the dream would be something like, you know, Too Bad or Clawful being made into a Christmas ornament. But they're not going to go that obscure, at least from a mainstream standpoint, they you know, but hell, an Orko Christmas ornament would be really cool.
Yeah, I could see that from Hallmark, especially if they're dedicating to put out just one a year. You figure they're going to be targeting the ones that are the most iconic that almost any fan can know. Like you said, you can see a Battle Cat Orko, hell, even like a little small little facade of a Castle Grayskull.
Castle Grayskull would be really cool too. I like because it's pretty cool because every year they do one of the replicas of the Transformers, the original Generation One. Of how the toys looked, and that right now they got Soundwave. It would be cool to see a ornament replica of the Grayskull playset.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that would just look really cool.
Yeah, and hell, like even what JSP said, he said She-Ra, you know, and I would.
She-Ra's a no-brainer. She-Ra and Hordak. I mean, I feel like, next year, one of those two should be, both of them for that matter. They've done He-Man Skeletor, let's get She-Ra and Hordak.
Yeah, because now we're getting antsy, because since we've never had an ornament in our entire life, now that we're getting them, it's like, do we have to keep waiting a year to just get one? Like, yeah, maybe.
Given last year, where I had heard other places had sold out of the He-Man, and I don't know if it was just my area. It could have been in various places throughout the U.S., but I'd like to think that the demand is there to do just more than one, whereas obviously they do multiple Star Wars, multiple... You know, they'll do at least like two or three Wizard of Oz ornaments, or you know, Two or three of this, and two or three of that.
And probably since finally testing the waters, since, you know, this is the first time, you know, doing Masters of the Universe, I'm sure now that they've seen that it's a very good seller, then possibly, yes, maybe they can up it up to two a year then. Because that was the first time they did one. They had no idea how it would sell, so I'm sure they didn't want to take a risk of, should we do He-Man and Skeletor? Like, let's just test the waters first. But, yeah, it's a good idea. I mean, if they could start it up with giving us two then every once in a while. But I guess, again, that's our not our greed, it's just our want, because we've never had ornaments. Just like, you know, I said, we've never had Pez Masters of the Universe. I'm sure if they put those suckers out, people would be buying Pez Masters. So there's always those things that when you never had, when you finally get them, it gets you real excited.
I wish there would be somebody who would, like, I would love it if somebody like Super 7 decided to put together, they're doing the Skeletor Halloween decoration. I would love to see them put together some sort of Christmas ornament for He-Man fans, you know, something extremely simple, like a small little figurine with a little hoop loop on the head there of Triclops or Evil Lynn or the Land Shark or something extremely simple in the same vein as the Hallmark ornaments, but has Super 7's stamp of approval on there. You know, I just feel like with their heart doing the one Skeletor decoration for Halloween, I'd love it if we got something that's not essentially like, you know, He-Man with a Christmas hat or something like that. I would love it to be kind of not Christmas oriented, kind of like the He-Man Skeletor. It's just them in a pose.
I do like that Skeletor that they have. I mean, it's a obvious no brainer. Because who doesn't remember? I mean, I loved when Halloween would come around and we get the decorations out. I always got to put up the hanging skeleton cardboard cutout, you know, arms, moves like this.
Yeah, ones that had like the witches that had like those paper stretchy legs.
Yeah, I remember those too, but yeah. The skeleton was just, damn, did I love that skeleton. And when they did the Skeletor that is now on sale at the Super 7 store, you get it, and yeah. I think it's $45 shipped. And, you know, you got to think, heck, it's supposed to be, I think, 55 inches. It glows in the dark. It's a very thick stock of a cardboard stock. But, you know, when shipping for something bigger, it's usually like maybe around $10. So you got to think, hey, okay, I think that makes up for if there was some people thinking, hey, this is kind of expensive. I'm like, oh, okay, what if it was $35 and it said $10 shipping? There's your $45. So, yeah. I mean, it's reasonable, especially for, again, something that's going to be bigger than normal.
Well, and plus, that's something you can hang up year-round. I could put this in the He-Man cave, the cave of power here, the main cave of power. I could hang up that Skeletor, you know, on one of these doors and just keep it up year-round and not necessarily make it a Halloween decoration. I mean, it's that's what's so cool about that. Is that it's not deliberately linked with Halloween. It's just something you can hang up for Halloween, but it works year round. Yeah, it's a cool decorative item.
Exactly, because it's not just for Halloween. I mean, I get the gimmick of it, but it's something that can be up all the time. Same thing the other no-brainer would be, you know, do Scare Glow, because Scare Glow glows.
Yeah.
See, you know, as for doing customs, I start looking at things and realizing how sometimes things can cost money. It's like you figure, okay, you know, first it's a very thick stock. I don't know if it's double-sided. That's the one thing I didn't find out. And if we ever, you know, hopefully talk to Brian Flynn about that, we could see is it double-sided. But first, you got a very thick stock. It's 55 inches. It's pin-jointed or however they do it to make it poseable. And it's glow-in-the-dark. I know that type of paper and that stuff to do that, that's a little pricier than normal paper. And when you factor all that in and then you do the shipping for $45, it makes it a little more, I guess, you know, easier to understand maybe why the price is why it is. I think maybe, I don't know if they would have said, hey, $35, $10 shipping, maybe that would have changed some opinions. But heck, if it's still pricey for some people, I can understand, because I know, like for me, I don't buy many things, you know, I don't get many things, but I think it's just cool. And like you said, if for Christmas time, they started doing something that could be not Christmas themed, but something that, yes, could work for Christmas and year round. Yeah, I think that could be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that'd be awesome. Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's tons of stuff you could do, but it would be nice to know that we could get more than just the one Hallmark that, you know, could offer. It requires no articulation, none of that stuff. You know, I'd like to think that could be a little PVC figurine that you could hang from your tree, you know, something small, like a, maybe even a pack of three, like a set of three evil warriors and a set of three heroic warriors. You get Triclops, Merman, and Trapjaw, and this little PVC figurine set you could just hang on your tree, you know?
You want something else that could kind of work? I mean, I've seen it done in the past. Okay, you remember in the past we had the Eraser figures. I mean, the Eraser,
yeah.
He-Man Erasers, whatever. But then they also released some that had a hole on the top of their head and could be used as a hanging figure, but it was still rubber. And so it was, sometimes it looked like it was the same figure, but it had a pop, a little hole right there. Well, the no-brainer could be, maybe they could take those muscle figures they have, paint them up, put a little pinhole there,
yep.
And then you could hang up the muscle figures.
Yeah,
in color.
I would love if they painted the muscle figures. I mean, obviously they look the way they do for the muscle gimmick, but to take those and paint them exclusively just for like Christmas ones with the little a little loop stand, you know, plugged into the head,
yep.
And sell them as a set of three.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I because they're reasonably priced already, it might be a little bit more with the paint application, like, you know, $10-$15. But $10-$15 for a set of little Christmas decorations of you know, Buzz Off, Whiplash, and Spikor. Or is Spikor part of this new wave?
I'm sure he is, because I thought I seen him in a couple groups. Like
I thought, it, like this latest group there. I know Buzz Off has been done before, and you know.
Yeah, I think Spikor is, because my one buddy who, you know, is a super diehard Spikor fan, Bruce Mitchell. I'm almost certain that he has a bunch of them in different colors, because you know how they had like the multicolored packs and stuff. So I think he had it. But yeah, just to shoot some ideas out there. I mean, you know, if they're thinking of other things to do, there's some things to, I guess, put in their head.
Yeah, that way they're not having to make anything new, just using what they've already got, put a little paint on there. And I'm sure that, obviously, like we said, well, that will have to up the price a little bit for the paint application. But I think it'd be well worth it to have some official Christmas ornaments that, you know, aren't Christmas themed. They just look like the characters, and that's what I would want. I'm not interested in getting Prince Dad with the Santa Claus outfit on my tree. I want the characters. I want Clawful hanging on my tree. I want Orko and Evil Inn hanging from my tree, you know.
Yeah, like you said, working as an ornament aspect, but also can be used year
round. Yeah, even the little Wind Raider and Rotom that they did. I would love to have those painted and have a Wind Raider and a Rotom dangling from my Christmas tree.
Yeah, so that all other cool little ideas. So those are things, that was all spur of the moment.
We're doing all this Christmas theme stuff on our month of Halloween. Man, how messed up are we?
Well, now
and
it's time
all about not doing the Christmas stuff in advance, too. And here, I've just pissed away that idea.
There we go. We just, we broke kayfabe or something. I don't know. But okay, well now, let's get into horror. Let's get into what we're going to do with some, like, who do we think out of the evil warriors, the snake men, the evil horde that are like considered maybe the muscle monsters. Like, you know, which one person can we pick from each faction do we think is considered the muscle of that faction? You know, somebody you look at thinking, you know what, when Skeletor snaps his fingers, this is the guy that he's going to call. Same for Hordak and same for King Hiss. Who's the ones they, you know, they consider? So which faction do you want to start off with?
Let's start with the snake men.
Okay. All right. Would you want to do yours or you want me to do mine?
You do yours first.
I was going, you know, and since it's because, you know, we've seen many different interpretations of these characters from Vintage to MYP, you know, I start getting other things popping in my head. I start looking at, obviously, how characters not only physically look, but what could they do to be even more physical? Because sometimes it isn't just about the physical, you know, physicality, you know, outer appearance looking, but, you know, this is a person that can still really get you. So I was going between the gigantic hulking look of kind of like Tongue Lasher from how the Staction looked, and I guess how he'd be in MIP. He's like a big looking son of a gun, but I was like, you know what, though? Squeeze from the Vintage line was one of my favorite Vintage Snake Man figures to play with. I loved having him wrap. I would actually take him, like, I'd have like a bunch of Masters of the Universe figures, the good guys lining up, and I'd have him like hugging, like he's squeezing all of them. And after seeing this interpretation in MYP, it kind of makes me go to Squeeze. I keep thinking, okay, not only is he a big sucker, but wow, this is the guy that you would want to call, that you would, if you got into his grip, how you gonna get out? You know, if you're, unless you're He-Man, which I'm sure he'd struggle too, but unless you're He-Man, who's gonna get out of that grip? It's like a boa constrictor, just tightening, tightening, tightening until it just crushes the life out of you and takes the breath out of you. So that's why I dropped Tongue Lasher. Even though Tongue Lasher looks like a big boy, I mean, he is, he's a big looking sucker. I gotta go with Squeeze because he's still big, But that's muscle. That's the muscle that I'm like, man. And plus, you know, they added in the new snake bite feature of his, you know, MYP. I mean, he could even grab you and then poison you or bite you. It's like, I wouldn't want to screw with that guy. So I pick Squeeze. That's my pick for the muscle monster going to the snake man.
Much like how your tongue lasher was kind of a close one for you, Rattlore was going to be my runner up for that one.
Okay.
What comes to mind first is his portrayal in the Snake Attack minicomic, where he's this silent attacker. He's mute the entire time in that book. But when he attacks He-Man, He-Man just hears that rattle. And next thing you know, Rattler's jumped all over his back. You know, and hold He-Man long enough for Tongue Lasher to strike him with his tongue and turn him to stone. But it was just looking at him from it's. For me, a lot of the stuff is going to be like stuff I see visually and not necessarily animation, just certain moments that I've seen throughout the year. I'm like, it just, you know, it left an impact. It left an impression on me. And Rattler's portrayal, even though he doesn't do a great deal of action in that one, I just found him to be an extremely threatening character. That is until I got the Powers of Grayskull, The Legend Begins mini comic and saw Squeeze. And as a kid, I didn't know. They don't say him by name. I had no idea who that character was. He was so striking to me. Who is this snake guy with long arms? And eventually would become my favorite snake man. And then to see the card art where he is attacking three heroic warriors, Extendar, Rio Blast, and Snout Spout all at once. Just attacking them all at once. And then, of course, his Oscar-worthy portrayal in the MYP where he's crushing stone with his, you know, limbs. And, you know, he's got the anaconda scream when he's getting ready to attack. And the hands, I mean, it's, you know, Tongue Lasher's a brute. Rattlore's a brute. Snakeface essentially is a weapon in itself because he's got the Medusa effect, which could be argued by anybody. What we're kind of looking at a lot is the muscle, the brute strength, the guy that if you're a heroic warrior and you're going toe to toe with this guy, I mean He-Man, obviously, you know, we always want to see him struggle a little bit, which makes his victory a lot more triumphant and epic. But a heroic warrior, you feel like this guy's going to be in for the fight of his life against these particular ones we're choosing here. And I mean, Squeeze and Clamp Champ. I mean, the guy with a solid grip, which I've always felt that Clamp Champ's weapon is an extension of his brute strength. The minute he grabs a hold of you in his arms, like, it's clamped around you. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to get out. That's what I've always thought about that character. And I like to think of Clamp Champ going up against Squeeze. These two guys who are all about just essentially bear hugs. You know, who can get out of the grip, you know. Right. Even though Clamp Champ doesn't do that, that's just kind of the idea I've had for the character. That, you know, giving the character a little bit more depth to his name. But Squeeze by far is to me the strongest of the Snake Men physically. I mean, Snake Face's power, I think, could arguably be greater than King Hiss's.
Oh yeah, you look at it in the different ways like that. I mean, yeah, but like I said, we're looking at the muscle type because you know. Actually, my favorite Snake Man when I played with as a toy and from MYP was Snake Face. I loved the gimmick and the thought of, because I was, you know, who didn't like Clash of the Titans growing up? And when you see Medusa and turning things to stone, and when at the end Perseus pulls out that head of Medusa and it still activates and it looks at the Kraken, and that little look, you know, from the little, you know, head took and turned the whole entire Kraken into stone, and he, you know, shatters. So that's a thing that's in your head. So yes, for that kind of aspect, different. But no, like I said, we're looking at muscle, the ones that you do picture. Man, He-Man could struggle with. You're somebody strong, you know, because it makes you think of anything when you watch, whether it's boxing, wrestling, or something. When you see the big guys going at, like, oh man, this could be a challenge. So yeah, you always want to see who's the person that maybe could go toe to toe, you know, with He-Man in strength aspect or in that kind of, you know, look of it. But well, that's for the Snake Man. Now the Horde, I'll let you. Well, you start with the Horde. I started with the Snake Man. You start with the Horde.
My choice goes to Grizzlor, and that's a lot of that was due to the first episode I can recall seeing him in, which is my favorite year episode, Talent for Trouble. where he's bear hugging He-Man and He-Man is struggling to get out of his grip. You know, I didn't have the mini comic because I got Grizzlord at a flea market as a kid. So I didn't see the Grizzlord mini comic at all and have no idea of him kind of being portrayed as this legendary creature. So it was just strictly the She-Ra cartoon. That's all I had to go by from that. And when I saw that, it was extremely impressionable to see that this brute looking, you know, hairy character with these fangs grabs a hold of He-Man, and He-Man is struggling to get out of his grip. Whereas Leech had She-Ra using his suction cups to kind of drain her strength. It was just like, wow, man, He-Man's met his match here with this one. Granted, it's a short scene. I know that. But as a child, it might as well have been 10 minutes long, that brief fight sequence. And because of that, Grizzlor's portrayal has transcended with, you know, through time with me as, I mean, and then of course you look at him, MYP, Leech is arguably the biggest, you know, I mean, it's as wide as a tractor trailer.
Yeah.
But Grizzlor is towering above all of them and just looks like a skilled hunter. You know, when the action figure comes with all this knives and axes, you could picture Grizzlor as someone like a tracker. You know, he's given, you know, prey, and, you know, once he gets a hold, I mean, you're confronted by him, this is someone that you're either going to have to kill him, or you're either going to give up or be killed. One or the other.
Yeah, because tracker and tribal-like. I mean, because you're right. Look at all the weapons. Like, you could figure, how could he dissect you with whatever he has? What could he do when you're fighting him, whether it's with an axe, a dagger, a sword, a crossbow? I mean, you don't know how he's going to hit you. I mean, you figure he could be in the trees. He could be in the shadows when he's attacking. And then when he does come at you, now he's going to go into that savage mode with, you know, well, obviously, I think it was almost a no-brainer. Grizzlor was the one I was going to pick, too, because not only from seeing him in She-Ra, but also just seeing other portrayals in ways he was drawn. Like, even in the cover of the one mini-comic, you know, when I think it was, I can't remember who he had above his head. If I'm thinking from Escape from the Slime Pit, or if I'm thinking of, I don't know if it was Grizzlor.
Well, in the Slime Pit mini-comic, he's holding He-Man up, you know, victorious, like he's got him captured. And, of course, he's holding Teela captive on the
Grizzlor the legend, one.
Yeah.
So when you just see these things, it immediately is in your head that how, you know, obviously he's supposed to be the brute. He's supposed to be the savage warrior.
Plus, he guards the jail for the Fright Zone. Like, he is the guy in charge of it. Like in Joe's, you know, favorite, the little storybook, you know, He-Man meets the evil horde. I think it's something along those lines. And I mean, Grizzlor is the one that guards, you know, the jail cell for the Fright Zone, which is, you know, the one prison cell. Also, I think he did in the Horde Golden book, you know, Hordak is guarding the jail cell. So you think this is the guy who's put in charge of keeping prisoners from escaping the Fright Zone. This is who Hordak can trust to keep people from leaving. And of course, you know, you got to fight all the pairs of the Fright Zone to get out. But I mean, that, obviously Grizzlor, it is the strongest. I mean, Leech is like the,
Leech was another one, which was great because you figured if he saps your power, you know, I almost, in my little canon of how I used to play with the toys, when I'd have him grab somebody, not only drain their power, I made him, like, gain the power temporarily. Like, my stories was when he grabbed He-Man, he started sapping and getting some of He-Man's power. It was strong like him, and he was such, like you said, he's portrayed as big, but he was such a thick and wide figure that it was cool putting them next to each other and just seeing how big Leech was. So I always had Leech, like, maybe sometimes besting He-Man. But Grizzlor, it sucks that we didn't get more of, you know, like you said, the brutality, even though we know the cartoons had to be kind-hearted, but we never got much of that Grizzlor I wish we would have gotten in the cartoon.
Not a whole lot. And, I mean, even as a kid, too, I ranked Leech pretty much up there with Grizzlor to a certain extent for the most part, because I just... It's those impressions of seeing the character. And I did have the Leech mini comic, but it was completely forgotten. Like, I had no actual memory of that mini comic. And for reasons, obviously, because it was a terrible mini comic, but it just didn't stick with me at all. It was the figure itself, because it was such a hulk of a figure. And then the She-Ra cartoon. I mean, that's what I had to go by. And of course, I loved his portrayal in that and saw him as almost pretty much an equal to Grizzlor to a certain extent, but to see Grizzlor, you know, going at it with He-Man physically. I was like, yeah, that to me, that sets the bar very high for me of like, okay, yeah, this is a very formidable foe for He-Man. So not to take it, because Leech, for people who may like, who pick Leech for this topic, I wouldn't argue it, because not only of Leech's size and strength, I mean, already, you throw in the fact that he can, you know, drain your power from you and just weaken you to where you're just, you know, helpless as a, you know, as a kitten. Yeah, that makes him, you know, pretty much, you know, I mean, you can't really argue that, but forcing me and Joe to pick the same guy.
Yeah, I mean, and it's bound to happen. I mean, again, and other things when they showed Leech, like on the back of the card art, when he's sucking the power out of the Man-at-Arms, and that time he's using his mouth, but we're used to into the cartoons, seeing the hands. So, you know, and like you said, we're just picking, you know, muscle. That's what we're thinking about, because I could always say Mantenna, because as much as they joked him in the cartoon, Mantenna accomplished more than almost anybody I could think of with those eye beams, distortion beams, freeze rays. He took care of a lot of people. I mean, all of them. I mean, he, you know, got with He-Man with wobbly legs one time. I think did something, took out She-Ra. So, but this is muscle. This is muscle. So, well, there. We had our first, I guess, pick of the same one. But, well, now we'll go to the Evil Warriors, and I'll pick my...
Well, no,
Evil.
We both picked Squeeze.
Did we? Oh, we did say Squeeze. Okay, well, we're not going to say do the same here, because I know you're going to say somebody different for Evil Warriors.
Yeah. I feel like this is the one where you and I are going to be completely different on.
Yeah, it will be different. And for me, it does come from what I see as a kid, from the mini comics to the cartoon. And in the cartoon, you would see, I think, at some point, Beastman, how you talk about how when people get a hold of him, I thought he even got a hold of He-Man. Did he not? Where he kind of like grabbed He-Man also. Not Prince Adam, because I know he got Prince Adam, but didn't he grab He-Man at some point too? Or is this something I'm confusing with Prince Adam?
I think you might be confusing with Prince Adam no more, because at any time, I mean, hell, I was just watching Colossal Awakes, I think it was yesterday, where Beastman charges at, and of course, He-Man cuts the whip, and then it just grabs Beastman, just throws him.
Well, see, there went a childhood memory that then didn't exist, but either way, I'm looking at Beastman.
Be wrong, but I...
No, you're probably right, I'm sure.
For the most part, Beastman never... And a physical altercation got the best of He-Man.
Okay, well, I'm sure. Yeah, I guarantee. I take your word for it, because I know you memorized the cartoon a lot more than I did.
Like, but I said, if somebody can correct me on that one, by all means, please do. Because
they won't.
You know,
I can guarantee they won't. Trust me, you got it. But either way, for me, Beastman is the muscle. I mean, he's the one that in the mini comics, you figure is always, you know, trying to do something savage, going after He-Man in the cartoons. Just his look, his persona, even in the movie, he was portrayed as such a monster. And to not cheat, because, no, I'm not going to use that cheating aspect. I don't want to have him using his mental powers to bring in help, because that's cheating. But I just like I said, when I'm comparing, looking at Merman, I don't see him as really as a muscle character. Triclops, I know I see him more as a fighter, a warrior, using his, you know, all his different eyes to do something. But as for just the brute, I mean, it's always Beastman. I mean, hell, even in MYP, I mean, they showed him as being bigger. Did they oaf him up? Yes. But for me...
Yeah, they really dumped him up pretty quick in the series.
Yeah, and they did, which I hate. But for a real Beastman, how we envision how he should, how he appears to be and should be, that should be the guy that's always doing stuff. That's the guy that Skeletor should call for. Even though, yes, he insults him in the cartoon. And then, of course, in MYP, it's the same thing. But that's not how it originally was, I'm sure, intended for Beastman ever to be. Beastman was that supposed to be that, I assumed, that would be the right-hand man. Even though she sure as shit, or sorry about that, people. Sure as heck, Evil Lyn, you know, she's somebody that could be obviously doing anything she wants. But muscle, brute strength, things that I think you'd want to take care of, I'm thinking of Beastman. Because, okay, correct me if I'm wrong on this. Did he not at least pick up some kind of boulders or something?
In the Dragon Invasion, when He-Man and Taylor go to find Beastman at Snake Mountain, he picks up a boulder and hurls it at He-Man.
Yeah.
Of course, He-Man catches it and throws it. But, I mean, there's been a few other, like in Colossor Awakes, to go back to this episode, when they're going to Colossor's throne, Beastman's holding the Energizer, and he's not struggling. He's just kind of leaning on it, which all the weight is in front of him. And he's sitting there holding it right in front of him.
He can't
see, but even while he's holding this massive machine, and not struggling. All he's doing is thinking about how he's going to, you know, turn on Skeletor. I just thought, now that's ambition. Oh, and this is funny too. In the episode Disappearing Act, when they're it's Mystery of Many Faces. Excuse me. When they're spying on Many Faces in the Widget Village, and it cuts to Skeletor, and he's looking at the hover screen. Beastman is staring at Skeletor as if, like, I'm going to cut your throat in your sleep, you son of a bitch. You know, just sorry for the language there. But it was just, it's this look, because he's staring right at Skeletor, is angry and pissed. And then Skeletor says, take a look, Beast. And then Beastman looks like, okay, I'll stop wanting to kill you right now. But it's just that attention to detail that Filmation put in, that it looks like he's, this very moment, doing nothing but plotting against Skeletor about overthrowing him, you know?
Which is hard to get across in a cartoon, because in real-life movies, you've seen that where sometimes the guy that's the right-hand man, the sidekick, you know, is actually looking at his boss, you know, behind his back, look like, mm-hmm, you know, but you could feel it because it's a real person. So to capture that in a cartoon is something that it's quite clever and that it works. It's at least people can understand. But yeah, I knew there was another thing that was in my head. So that boulder part with Beastman holding it, throwing at He-Man, I knew those other things that in my mind made me think of Beastman, of his strength. So my pick is,
well, I mean, and Pawns of the Game Master, when the Game Master is looking at competitors for his Cosmic Games, Beastman is the only evil warrior he thinks about. Like, he's like, no, Ramman's too clumsy, Beastman. But then he says his savage nature is completely untamable, you know, or too untamable for him. Obviously, he is smart enough, you know, to go out on his own, work for Skeletor, and do things. But I like the idea that Beastman is a savage beast. This guy's like, you know what? He's too much of a brute for me to try to control, to, you know, do my bidding and work alongside my trio of villains as well. So I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. You know, that Beastman was like someone he was looking at, and he's like, no, he's too much for me.
Okay. All right. Well, there, so that's my pick. I don't know, like I said, the vision of Beastman holding He-Man in any canon. I don't know why it's in my head, but I kept thinking Beastman.
Well, he does it in the live-action movie, for one thing. He comes out, and He-Man's struggling to get out of Beastman's grip.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that was in my head. It could have been a combination. I thought I had a vision.
But I thought you meant Filmation when you said that.
No, when I first said it, I was thinking Filmation, because I remember when he was holding Prince Adam, and Prince Adam was doing that struggling, but I still had a thought of him holding He-Man, and it could have well been from the movie. So I'm glad you said that. And I wanted to say, yes, JSP, sorry, I did drop a naughty word. My bad. You brought it up in chat.
Well, I did too a moment ago, too. It just, we're trying to keep ourselves neutered on the show. We just try to make it, you know, more, you know, because we don't need to cuss. It's like, yeah, we don't have to. It's just this.
Yeah, it's a slip of the tongue. Yeah. So we apologize. But all right, yeah. So who's your muscle? I can't wait to hear who your muscle monster is. I'm sure it's somebody I wouldn't even think of. Probably Clawful, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's Clawful.
It was a Clawful.
It was Clawful. Triclops would have been the other choice because of Diamond Ray disappearance. But Clawful to me, because of Clash of Arms and Driel's return, I mean, Clawful to me was my favorite evil warrior as a little guy. Too bad it's my favorite now. But Clawful still.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but didn't even Skeletor refer to Clawful as like his right hand man or something in one of those episodes? Didn't he say some line?
Yeah, in Castle of Heroes, I think he refers to Clawful as his, you know, right hand man. Of course, he's not really portrayed as, you know, about no different than the rest of the Evil Wars, but his first appearance is in Driel's return, and he's working on his own with Trapjaw. And I mean, where Trapjaw is scared of him. And when Clawful confronts He-Man, he just comes over and immediately picks He-Man up. And He-Man is struggling to get out of. I mean, just one of these evil wars coming over and picking up He-Man and holding him in the air and holding him for a lengthy amount of time. You know, obviously, He-Man will break free and then punches him. Mm-hmm. But that was just such a, you know, for Clawful to be the alpha male of this duo because Trapjaw, you know, not always was perceived as like an alpha male villain in the show. At times he was, like in Double-Edged Sword. But where Clawful, his first episode comes in and just is taking charge of the situation and talks down to Trapjaw, picks up He-Man and makes He-Man fight to get out of his grip. And then his portrayal in Clash of Arms has been with me since I was 3 or 4 years old. That mini comic, Clash of Arms, but him and Jitsu left that such an impression. But Clawful just come off to me as such a force of nature to me, and it's hard for me to explain why Clawful hit such a chord with me.
No, I mean he does. I mean he looks like he can definitely.
He just looks. I mean, when I look at the way Larry Houston, which has always been my favorite interpretation of Clawful, even with the different look, where he's got like the balls off kind of type upper body with the stripes across his chest, like if they had made.
I like the different look though. I like.
Yeah, I like that look, and you know, I'd like to see that done again. Excuse me, but that look and his persona is just, you know, he's smacking Fisto around quite a bit in that mini comic to where he's just. Even though, you know,
Fisto. I'm going to say two things I was going to say real quick. First, I wanted to say that JSP said he would have went with Faker if he lasted longer in the cartoon. And that could have been interesting to see how they could have portrayed Faker. And given
I think we'll find out the Faker that we're supposed to see.
And I was going to say that, too, from James E. Talk. We'll see how James does it. And not that I'm changing my pick, because my pick stays the same. But it's funny you bring up Larry Houston, because if I was to pick – based on Larry Houston's interpretations of things, I would have went with Whiplash, because Whiplash beat the heck out of Fist. I mean, not only with physicality of hands, but that tail. It's like, Jeff, Whiplash would have been one very intimidating son of a gun. I mean, look at how he was in MYP, too, just busting through the trees. And but I'm not changing. I'm sticking with
Beast. Oh, no, but I mean, and that was another – that's why that mini comic to me is the greatest piece of He-Man – reading material. I mean, of everything, that is single-handedly the best of the best. I've said it before, I'll say it again. To have all these evil warriors portrayed so seriously, I mean, Whiplash is saved the best for last in that one, where he's the executioner and getting ready to kill Fisto, and just comes in and just Fisto.
You could have said he would have. I mean, basically, he could have. If He-Man didn't come to save the day, you could have said Whiplash could have killed Fisto. Fisto didn't best Whiplash at all in that fight.
No. Fisto doesn't. He catches his tail, but that ends up biting him in the butt for doing that. So, no, there isn't a single moment in that fight that Fisto gets a single punch in, where he takes out Jitsu relatively easy. Clawful makes him work for it. I mean, Clawful's cutting up his armor, smacking him around.
Yeah, to get caught with that piece of wood, or yeah.
Yeah, and how they were portrayed at the beginning, where they're all coming out and attacking. I mean, I just love that quartet of evil warriors. And Clawful, to me, was like the leader of that group when I read that as a child. I just saw him. This is the guy that, you got a group of evil warriors, if Clawful's in that group, Clawful's the one running the show. Clawful's the guy that can go one-on-one with He-Man with no weapon. A guy that relies strictly on his cunning and brute strength. And also how he's portrayed as someone who wants to turn on Skeletor, like in Things That Go Bump in the Night. He's challenged He-Man one-on-one several times in the show. And Witch and the Warrior, Trip to Morania, Driel's Return. There's three episodes where Clawful has gone one-on-one with He-Man.
And I don't think he ever got the disrespect from Skeletor like the others did.
Only when Skeletor called him, you know, trash talking him. You know, someday I'll turn on Skeletor, and then Skeletor catches him right there on it. But even then, no, Skeletor does not belittle Clawful in any way. I don't recall. I mean, only for that remark. In Castle of Heroes, he's respected. Driel's Return, he's not working with Skeletor. Trip to Morania, he's not, you know, mess with. And Witch in the War, I don't believe he's given any kind of derogatory remarks by Skeletor. He is, for, I mean, not all of them are cut down by Skeletor. Clawful's one of those that's not that you kind of feel like Skeletor respects pretty consistently.
Yeah.
Well, the character is just such a badass looking character. I want to see more Clawful. I mean, I've got Clawful standing prominently next to Too Bad, Modulok, and Strongarm, and, you know, on my evil on my vintage shelf, I got Clawful standing above the rest of the evil warriors on Snake Mountain. There, I mean, I just hold Cloth on such high regard as the toughest, the baddest of the bad of the evil warriors. Aside from Too Bad, but
no, it's a good choice. Cloth was definitely a choice. That's great. That works from how you've seen him in the mini comics to the toy to Filmation. All different looks, but basically the same character. You know, characteristics of who he is and his muscle and what he can do. So I like Cloth. It's a great choice. So well, at least we had two that were the same and one that was different, but those were all great choices because that's what we were doing for our horror month. We want to pick muscle monsters. Next week we'll have something else. Then, well, you guys will find out next week.
Yeah, it'll be kind of the bewitching hour.
Yeah, there you go. So next week will be interesting on that. Now, to continue with the horror theme, we're going to end it with a cool thing we're going to do. It's one of the most frightening episodes and the only two-parter from The House of Chakotay 1 and 2, but we're going to do part 1 today. And Tyler, you tell everybody where to go, how to do the stuff, so they can watch and listen to what we have to say during the commentary.
Okay, just real quick, I have to say, I thought we had initially planned to do a leech bio discussion, because I told Doug that. So if it shows up in the description of this episode, character bio of leech.
Oh, well, I just looked, it does say that. Oh, well, that'll be changed for our final one that we release. We'll make sure it says House of Chakotay. Commentary part one.
And we'll say Muscle Monsters and House of Chakotay part one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I just seen that.
Yeah, I'm all game to do that, but I just want, in case people, when they view this and they're waiting for the lease discussion, well, Joe screwed the pooch on that one. So.
Sorry, my bad. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. My mind sometimes, like I said, it goes, but I apologize for that. So, well, tell them how to do House of Chakotay Part 1.
I'm going to be watching House of Chakotay Part 1 on a different device. Of course, I'm in here in my other room here, so I'm going to be watching it on another device. But we'll be starting it from right when the Filmation logo, comes across the screen. So I'll just
find it on YouTube. Tell them they can go to YouTube.
It's on YouTube. You can, do a Google search for it. I mean, it's on YouTube. I mean, there should be no reason why you can't watch it. DVD, VHS, anybody?
Yeah.
But I'm just going to count down from three. When I say play, you hit play at the same time as us. So we'll say 3, 2, 1, play. Bing.
Man, all right. Oh, our first two-parter that the only two-parter we ever had.
The only two-parter, this was a year in the making, because last year around this time we talked, we've got to do House of Chakotay next year. So here we are doing the commentary for both one and two here. And I can't reiterate how much I dreaded renting this tape as a kid. I mean, even though Skeletor was nowhere near in this episode, Mask just scared the piss out of me as a kid. And then twice as much when part two happened. And it was pretty cool because the VHS tape just had those two episodes on there. So I'd watch the episodes back to back and be scared out of my mind.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Voluntarily. And I remember having the option to buy this at the video store when they were getting rid of some of their stock. This was one of the tapes. And I looked at it and like, I don't have the balls to buy this tape. So I ended up buying... I think volume 10 that has Evelyn's plot, and then She-Ra volume 2. I was so scared to rent this tape. It was just, I don't know how I managed to do it, because I was so scared of it. I really was.
Which would, that's what's, man, I wish that, I know some stations rerun stuff and have old episodes, and this would be just a perfect thing to put on Halloween. They did it last year on one of those retro channels for Christmas. They put on the Christmas special, which was cool. They actually put it on at Christmas. It's too bad you couldn't get this for Halloween, putting part one and two on.
Well, it's on Netflix, so there's no reason why, too. I mean, hey, line this up. On network television, it might be kind of hard, but... there's a couple episodes, but that you could say could ring in the Halloween season. But I mean, it's across the board. This is the most celebrated scary episode of the entire series. I think She-Ra included.
Just the only way to get me moving half the time is to bribe me with food. Orko wants him to do a little trick. He gets that fish and bam.
He's like cake, ice cream. Like, oh, that sounds a lot better than eating fish. Of course, I like fish too, but I figured it kind of worked backwards. I like the shot of Cringer smiling like that.
And standing too, everything. He's sitting there standing, he's crossing his arms and everything after he goes to that hoop and crashes it. Now I know we might be off maybe a second or two. Like, what are you seeing exactly right now?
Oh, He-Man's the source is talking to Adam telepathically right now.
Okay, just seeing that, and then went to Cringer making the sad face.
Yeah, so, same. Yeah, yeah, we're on the same. We're on
oh,
the
good,
same.
Good. Then, all right, wanted to make sure because I know sometimes.
Coming up here for, and I never paid too much attention other than just assuming that, you know, there's this other story going on. But for those who aren't familiar with the story that the source is talking about, it's a deleted scene from the opening of this episode, which James Etalk has got the storyboards and made a little nice YouTube video out of that. So if you want to see what she's talking about, go to his YouTube channel and watch this video that shows all of that.
I just had, oh my God, I had an epiphany. I just had an idea that we're going to give James. He should have Mr. Mitrovich
do this. Yes, that needs to be done. Yes. Oh my God. That's what needs to be done.
We're going to mention this to James. And
okay, Gretchen. All right. Yeah, we've got to.
Oh my God, it would complete it, what we always wanted. So, okay, we had our side geek moment. We would go on and on for that, so we got to get back to this because, oh man, I just right now thinking of that. Okay, well, now they found out what? They found out about that rising pyramid.
Well, this pyramid that rose out of the sand, and that the sorceress thinks it must have looked something like this. And of course, she's quite convinced that it sounds like she's aware of what it is, but I guess she probably doesn't want to say, well, obviously, for story wise, because we want to build up the surprise for later on. But from her standpoint, it's almost as if, like, I don't know if we have to worry about Chakotay. She said, which is why I'm afraid there's some ancient evil behind this happening, so we need you to investigate. Obviously, because, here we go, Trapjaw's own hideout. The scariest man in He-Man mythology.
First, what a creepy little entrance to that hideout that they had. That was just creepy. But Mask, I mean, every time I heard him, I love that crazy. I mean, you know, that way
he's I don't know how you describe his voice. It sounds so robotic, but he's not robotic. But it works so good for the character.
Yeah, a weird, robotic, creepy, echoing voice. You know, I'm always a sucker for that person behind a mask. I mean, obviously I do it. But I just, I love the gimmick. I love wondering what is behind this mask. But he sounds like an intimidating character. And he looks intimidating. He looks frightening. He does look scary.
Yeah, he was extremely frightening to me as a kid. And I mean, to me, this guy, I could say, too, in this one episode, from the male villains, could be argued the most seriously portrayed villain of the series. I mean, Skeletor has got some extremely serious moments, but this guy's one-shot appearance. I mean, here we are. Now he's calling out Trapjaw. And it's just, God, he's so commanding, you know. And here he's never even heard of He-Man. I like that touch.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
And then here he's just picking Trapjaw with one hand. Something that we would see He-Man do, but here this guy, I mean, look how much bigger Trapjaw is compared to him. And Mask is just all of this, that look. Oh, God, it's so cool. You better be right, Trapjaw. Oh, man, what a badass.
No, he is. And earlier, of course, we've seen old Rammy take care of business with those, like, mechanical.
Yeah, the spider drones, which they would show up again, I think, Beauty and the Beast in season two, I think. Those same robots.
Yeah, no, like I said, it's just always cool to see Ram-Man. It's, you know, he doesn't back down from nothing. You know,
and this is Ram-Man's shining moment, and we have to thank Larry Dottillo for that. His run in these two episodes is brilliant, the best of the series.
Oh,
let me ask you this, Joe. When he calls Chakotay his mistress, it sounds like, you know, like he's in control. You know, because the term mistress is, you know, like, you know, someone who, you know, you have a woman that you, you know, sleep around with, which is not the case with the children of the cartoon. But Chakotay is clearly running the show. But it sounds like from this perspective that Mask is running the show. Do you pick up on that at all? Or?
Well, I picked up at, you know, first, you know, we. You
I mean, know, even we though it's had, not, Chakotay's the one commanding him, as we know from the deleted scene and everything, of course, but.
I seen it as almost like a team effort, meaning his goal is to bring his mistress back, you know, his girlfriend, because that's how, when I heard mistress as a kid, I always thought that's his girlfriend, whoever this woman he's talking about. But it seemed like they would have been a perfect team, like they would have equally ran things together. He just needs to take care of all this crap to have the, you know, hurt the house rise, and then of course for him to become, you know, with her, you know, I mean, to team up with her to, so they both could rule together, because it's all about the darkness, you know, that house of darkness. He's, you know, consumed of darkness. That mask is consumed of darkness, which makes him him. So I could see them, you know, being equally ruling together, almost like an evil king and queen, if you'd want to say that. But that's how I guess I kind of always looked at it, and still do, if she could have ever, you know, been with him. Of course, we don't get to see him. And you also get to see, real quick, side note, Oracle can do his magic right there, wasn't having issues. I always liked when that happened.
I didn't like Oracle being portrayed as a slub. You know, I like him having his moments where he's helpful to the battle.
Exactly, especially if he's their only magician. You know, I'm not including the sorceress because she's in Grayskull, but if they're going to have anybody that can do some magic spells to go against Eva Lynn or something, at least let him be competent. We know on Trala he's the most powerful magician, but of course, you know, for kids and humor's sake, he had to be, you know, screwing up spells and messing up man-at-arms half the time. But in this episode, not only with Ram-Man, but Orko, he shined a lot in this. He wasn't screwing up.
Here we go. Great evil moment here. I like the shadowing on it.
I was just going to...
Oh.
It's like we're on the same level. I was going to say, I like that they were doing the different shadows and glares and effects, and they did it with a couple of characters. I think even He-Man in certain scenes, but, you know, because we're so used to, you know, looking at this, flat colors on every character, the same thing. So anytime you see detail, it's cool. And, of course, now we get to see Malakta.
And I love the shot. I love these pictures in the books, these maps in the books that you see, like in this and Dragon's Gift. I just thought it was so cool, and I think Malakta, I think, is typically universally beloved. I feel like I can't understand why people don't want him in classics. I mean, to have a, you know, the archaeologist, I mean, he's just such a fondly remembered character. No, he's not a heroic warrior by any means, but he's just such a fondly remembered character from these two episodes and his other appearance.
I mean, God, if they're putting characters that are in backgrounds and make no sense, then why wouldn't they release Malakta? He's been in a lot of episodes, and he is an important character. He has his role. He could come with a lot of kind of those gadgets he used in the episodes. Why wouldn't you want to have Malakta? I wouldn't see why anybody wouldn't want him either. He's memorable. He probably appeared in more episodes than, like I said, most of the characters we have in action figure form.
And I like Stanlin here as he makes his appearance. I mean, you it's so easy to make kids in these shows irritating. And Stanlin, to me, as a kid, was likable. As an adult, I mean, Linda Garrett does a great job, you know, portraying Stanlin. And he's a likable character. I mean, not this could be such an easily screwed up character where you're just, I mean, begging for him to be taken by Shakoti.
And they
but he's not.
Up.
He's a likable character.
Yeah, and you notice they actually give him some kind of guns. It's like he's not just a kid drawn with, like, you know, kind of flat arms, no muscle. They actually look like they want to make it kind of like, you know, an in-shape younger kid, too.
Yeah, and Malakta's got some, you know, some well-built forearms and biceps, too, man. And the archaeologists, you know, they all go to the same gym in Eternia, man.
Well, heck, all the damn digging that you have to be doing and all the, you know, excavations and stuff, he's got to be pretty much in shape. You kind of would think that. Yeah, you got to be in shape to do that kind of work. So, now...
Here it is. I always thought this kind of curious where Cringer's like, people are... Not everyone's aware that Cringer can talk, you know. Like, it's still shocking on Eternity to see a green tiger that talks, which I thought was a nice touch. You know, that not everybody has seen everything on this planet, which adds to the vast scope of what's on this planet.
No, I can understand. I admit when I was a kid, I was like, well, Jesus, look at all these other characters. Why is that? Oh, wait, I always wondered why they... did they get that from Luke Skywalker or something? Borrow his vehicle or something? It always reminded me of
a
Star
Wars
vehicle.
It looks just like the Land Speeder from A New Hope, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Plus, it's in the desert, too. So, yeah, it's... And here's Mask's hideout with this kind of... crazy looking screen that he's looking through.
I don't know why I always got a big kick out of seeing when any character turned into like another one as in a disguise, you know, from Evelyn to him to many other characters, even including Skeletor. I just for some reason got such a kick of seeing one person posed to be another, you know, as for having their hidden, you know, hidden agenda to be the person that's what guide them or something or what.
And it's interesting, too, that Mask still keeps his face hidden. Like, even he doesn't have an actual face, his disguise still covers up his face.
Right.
You know, it really just builds up this mystique. And I love this music that we've seen in so many episodes or heard in here. I mean, it's just, all this is so cool to see Mask doing all his stuff. He's, you know, cutting the land speeder engine up, and then to contact the Reptile Man in their one appearance.
You know what? I love these Reptile Men, and I love that the steeds that they're on. For some reason, to me, I'm sure, like I said, this is just my opinion, they always felt Black Star-ish. I felt like it was like Black Star type of character.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. All the more reason why Black Star and He-Man could cross over.
Oh, they would be a perfect. But, I mean, looking at these guys and all their different looks, their weapons, hell, I mean, I think those would be fantastic action figures as well. To have, like,
hell yes. I mean, the Reptile Man leader, any of the, you know, foot soldiers, and of course the reptile steed they have there, and
yeah, that'd be cool as hell. It really would. I would just love to see that. Also, like seeing Ram Man being the Jack there. That was
yeah,
a play on
that was
things.
A nice touch.
It was a nice touch. You know, I when I looked at those reptile people again when they showed them, from some parts to me, they slightly reminded me of Lizard Man, meaning their feet. And you know how Lizard Man has that, like, sash that goes over his chest here that certain way? It even looked like they kind of had that. Like, it was a similar design, but different, but looked kind of similar.
You could probably tie in Lizard Man to that race of Reptile Man, since he is a reptile after all. Probably someone who probably is, like, turning against their cause. Like, you know what? I ain't about plundering and killing people and you know, doing wrong deeds. You know, you guys can go to hell. I'm joining the Heroic Warriors, man, hanging out in the sun.
Heck yeah. And here we go again. Ram Man, not fearing nothing. He's going after that gigantic thing. Of course, his feats did not work. You know what I mean? He tried to, but Ram Man ain't backing down. I always love seeing Ram Man go right after he needs to. And this coming up, I always love this kind of transformation. I mean,
yeah, it was nice to alter the generic transformation sequence here to have the Sam explode off of Cringer to turn into Battle Cat here.
Yeah, and it even sounded like they used He-Man's voice slightly when he was running.
Yeah,
you
know,
yeah.
We're out of sight about now.
Yeah, I was like,
and then it cuts back to Adam.
Right.
Excuse me.
But this was cool because, bam, you get to see boom all the sand blow off, and I thought it was cool. You didn't need all the special effect background thing because you figured they'd go back to that, you know, background image, but they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't break the stock footage a whole lot. They did it on a few occasions, like this one, the Dragon Invasion. And it always looks good when they decide to do something a little bit different.
Yeah, it does. Because it's memorable. You're like, hey, I've never seen something like that. So it always makes that seem like definitely a more memorable scene.
And if given that these episodes are only about 22 minutes long, I mean, some of these, like this one's a prime example. There's so much going on in this episode. That were all this, and I feel like for this to have been written after House of Chakotay Part 2 was written, that all this backstory was written, you know, the mask character and everything to make it a longer story. I mean, it's really cool to know that this was, you know, kind of written as a prequel to House of Chakotay Part 2.
Oh, that's interesting. I never knew that.
Yeah. I always thought that was really cool, and it just shows you what. I mean, one hell of a writer that Larry DiTilio is. And all these characters are written as extreme, and that's a credit to him. I mean, every character in this story is extremely likable. I mean, the entire roster. Orko is portrayed very confidently. You know, Mask is the epitome of evil. Stanlin's likable. Malakta's likable. Ram Man is, this is an Oscar worthy performance by Ram Man in these two episodes. And the constant buildup of terror and suspense. Here we are, the shot in the back, like him sitting in the back. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And not, like I said earlier, not only Ram Man, but even Oracle. Oracle was definitely given some shiny moments to where it wasn't just him screwing up, from taking care of Trapjaw earlier to where he even does something else later in this episode. So that's what I like. Ram Man was even portrayed great. You didn't get much of the hammy stuff in this. Besides Cringer sometimes being scared, you didn't really.
But even then, Cringer was not written as annoying. I mean, it all sounds like I either feel bad for him. I'm like, no, that's how Cringer would react. And it's just, you know, that's why I don't like seeing He-Man as a punchline in the mainstream. Because of stuff like this. Because it's written so damn good.
Oh, absolutely agree. And here they go, and here they go. You know, I also like that they didn't double do the transformation scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just great to have him cut to, you know, He-Man just throwing him right out of the tent and just.
Yeah, because I'll be honest, I remember it as a kid. I can't remember if it might have happened in one. I don't know if I'm just thinking of Secret of the Sword, but if there was ever a double transformation, it wasn't as impactful as the first time, because I was like, I just seen that. I don't want to see it again. So I like that they cut away from it, and then basically, yeah, you just see what happened. Bam, he's in the tent, takes care of them, and, well, of course, now you see Ram Man just taking care of them, too. So Ram Man wasn't there for just background nonsense. And here, again, look, you'll see what Orko is going to do. And he does it without any effort. He sat there, and bam, he brings up the tent, brings down the tent, traps all of them. I like it. They're like in a big old bag. So Ram-Man had some cool, Orko had some cool time to shine.
I mean, everybody's getting to participate in this awesome fight with the Reptile Man. Like, everybody's getting a moment to show they can all hang with He-Man. This is such a cool shot of him picking up the beast and throwing him. I mean, it just looks so cool.
That'd be a cool steed if they ever released
him. Oh, man, it would. You hear us, Super 7?
Yeah, I think, again, they made Shikoti and they already have Mask.
Well, we need Reptile Man and Malakta. That's what we're, you know. Here's the House of Darkness here. Oh, boy. Seeing Mask on his knees is like some sort of, black magic devil worship kind of stuff, you know?
I love how evil that mask looks, too. I like seeing every time it glows, something's going to happen. Anytime that mask glows, here comes something. And these types of creatures always, freaked me out. I know to
some people. Yeah, this was creepy to me as a kid, the sand monster was.
Yeah, because I know some people say it's not, too. Oh, and there he goes. He went left-handed there. But I always like seeing when he'd attack a sand-type creature and then nothing would happen, it's because it's just sand. So I always like seeing He-Man have this weird issue with a sand type creature, but then of course, he always finds a way of, doing something different like that. That's pretty cool, drilling through the ground and coming up underneath Mask. He-Man wasn't easily, beaten, but back to the mask glowing again, and here we go. Here, Orko ain't chicken. I always like it too. Orko ain't afraid, and we're gonna see what Orko does here in a couple minutes too. Which, yes, the power of that darkness, it's now kind of...
Which was creepy to just say that, no face behind it. It's just complete darkness. I mean, that's another added layer of texture to the character.
I'm so glad they didn't, have some goofy drawn face, whatever. But I love seeing, just complete darkness. And I hated when he disappeared, when He-Man shattered that mask there and he disappeared and nothing. It's like, oh, damn. So all he was like kind of like an evil specter, smoke, essence, and all of it was channeled, maybe most of it through that mask. Oh, I hated seeing when Mask was gone. You wouldn't as a kid, but I did. I hated seeing that character gone.
I did too, but I mean, as a kid, it was just like, this is only temporary relief because part two is getting ready to start here in a few moments, man, and it's like, man, it's like I'm just starting the roller coaster ride right now. Because, I mean, it's... and it's cool that they write Orko out of the story. He's given a hero's, sending a send-off, that he's recovering in Castle Grayskull. And here it is, the epic, memorable...
To be continued. And, yeah, scene about her. It's like, wow, what is she going to be like? And I guess, next week... we're going to find out what she's like. And that's going to be a fun episode to discuss. So,
yeah, I think I may even have to turn the lights off for next week's episode. Just sit here in the dark and record this, with no lights on, sit here and, if only I could go back and tell my 4 or 5 year old self, I will be doing a commentary for this episode. It's currently scared the piss out of me in the dark.
Might have to. And I wanted to say in the chat room, JD Gibson, he said he'd buy a 2-pack of those Reptile Warriors too. Oh yeah, you bet, man.
Absolutely. Definitely. We need Joe to put together one of his Facebook posts. Would you be interested in Reptile Man? And send that to Super 7. That's what Joe needs to do this week.
I will. That is what I'm going to do, because I think a lot of people would love to see them in a 2-pack, different weapons. And as you see, they're not the same. They had different kind of, drawings for those Reptile Men. So that'd be cool. And then in the future, if we can be super ambitious, somewhere in the future, we get that steed. Will it ever happen? I doubt it, but it'd be great if it did.
So. It'd be awesome. Well, it just goes to show, I know not everybody's as well-versed in the He-Man lore like a lot of fans are. The hardcore fans, they are familiar with Mike and Stanlin and Lord Mask and Reptile Man and various other obscure characters from the series, whereas, people who, may remember the cartoon and interested in buying some new toys, they're probably not going to be interested in stuff like that, which is kind of nature of the beast. And a lot of toy lines that go back deeper and deeper. I'm sure the G.I. Joe collector's line kind of goes with the same thing when they're doing more obscure characters that are probably not as known or beloved, but hardcore fans can appreciate all of it.
Yeah, kind of like
because this is rich. It's rich. It's a rich mythology.
It is. And it only makes your collection look that more dazzling when you have a variety of different creatures and, you know, vehicles, steeds, whatever. It just, yes, people love doing their display photo pictures and just to show their whole collection. So, yeah, the more the merrier. Give us a lot of different unique characters and I'd be all over it. Let me see. Ivan, I'm going to call you Ivan. I feel bad I can't say your last name. I will, but we have Ivan in the chat room. And he said, we need that shattered mask. I like it. Hell, I'll make one. I'll crack it in half and I'll sell it. I'll just take whatever it is and just break it in half.
There you go.
It reminds me of that of Jason's mask. You know, after it was like, you know, popped a hat in one of them and they were like piecing it together and stuff. So yeah, see, you can always get ideas and stuff. So mask, he's kind of like the Masters of the Universe version of Jason. You wonder what's behind it. Just nothing. But of course, Jason, he's mutated in every different one and different one. That was a side rant of Jason. It happens. It always.
I say he's, you know, well, I mean, obviously he talks, but where he's like Michael Myers, you know, the devil's eyes, you know.
Right. Always cool. Yeah. So what's behind the mask? But, well, everybody, we appreciate you joining us in the chat room and your comments and things that you had to say. And hopefully you'll be here next week when we finish up with part two of the commentary, along with having a special guest and a couple other topics. So next week will be pretty fun for our big Halloween episode. We're really going to emphasize about the frightening aspects of that, especially with the guest we're going to have next week, which I'm sure you'll all really enjoy the guest we have next week.
Yeah, she's quite the bewitching lady herself there.
Yeah, it'll be good. It will be good. So, well, T-Rex, how did you got anything you want to close with before we wrap up?
An update on the Leech mini comic. Carson has got the pre-orders printed and ready to go. I think he'll be mailing them out. He's going to send me a few copies and my own personal copy. I gave him my address today. So those should be in the mail, like people who pre-ordered it. And also, he's going to be posting information on if you did not pre-order, how you can get in contact and get your own copy as well. But they are finally done. They have been printed. They are ready to go after all this time. It's going to be well worth the wait. And, I mean, there's still parts of it I have not seen done and completely finished. So I'll be seeing it for the first time along with a lot of others who haven't seen all of it. So I just want to let everyone know who did purchase it. It's coming. They are done. And they hopefully... He wants to put together an advertisement for it as well, so I don't, that might be to coincide to get people interested who have not bought it, as opposed to people who've already bought it. I expect them to be sent out probably this week. If I said that wrong, Carson, please correct me, and I'll make sure to change that information as well. However, if you are interested, go to the Card Backs and Mini Comics and More Facebook page. You can contact Carson through that if you're interested. There's a lot of samples of the artwork for that mini comic as well. And again, I want to stress to check out Kevin Sharp's artwork on DeviantArt and his Facebook page for his Kickstarter, the Wreckage and Grey Wolf comic books that he's working on. Plus, not to mention, he does some beautiful He-Man and Thundercat artwork. So if you'd like to have some original He-Man Thundercat artwork done, he's a fantastic artist to go to. He does commissions and things like that. So yeah, give him a look up and check out his artwork. It's all on Facebook, and he's an extremely nice guy to talk to. And hopefully we can get him on the podcast as well. He showed an interest in coming on, so we'll try and set that up sometime in the future about trying to get Kevin on to just talk. Okay. He's a big Manny Faces fan, so maybe we could do like Mr. Manny Faces episode or another character by Manny Faces or something.
That'd be fantastic to have him on, yeah. Oh, yeah, we most definitely will do that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll do something, yeah, Manny Faces related. But, all right, well, thanks for the info on the comic as well. And, well, as for me, I only will tell you guys where to go. You can go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, All great people, so until next week for Halloween, have a powerful day.
You don't need $1 million to do nothing. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do shit.
Oh. Boy, you know what, and when I say I don't know it, you're going to be like, oh, Joe, you just mentioned this movie the other day. I don't know it.
Office Space.
Huh. I still don't remember it.
It's when Lawrence comes over to talk to Ron Livingston's character when they're asking about, you know, what would you do with $1 million? And he tells him, he's like, I would do nothing. I'd sit around and do absolutely nothing. He's like, you don't need $1 million to do nothing. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do shit.
Wow. But I don't even remember. I always remember some of the goofy other moments and him walking past Lumberg like nothing when he's under his pants and other things. But, well, there you go. I definitely didn't know that one, but... Okay.
Oh, well. There's always next week.
There is. So, thank you everyone for joining us in the chat room. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you guys all next week.
See you next week.
All right.